Ground ball, second base side, it's through a base hit. Here's Castellanos, they're going to try and score him. Go to the plate, not in time. The run scores. Both runners move up. It's a tie ball game.
2-3 and 4 in the D-backs' ninth inning. Peralta lifts it the other way. Pretty deep left field. And it's gone. David Peralta, that's his sixth and his third hit tonight. 7-6 Diamondbacks.
The ones that sting the most are when you lose leads. You know, we did a good job fighting back tonight, getting in, tying the game. Fortunately, they scored in the top of the ninth and then beat us. For a game that looked like it was going entirely Diamondbacks' way, I thought we did a good job turning it around. You know, I've been saying for about a week and a half, I want to continue to get him into higher leverage situations because we're a lot better team when he's pitching in those situations successfully. I talked to K-Rod for about 15 minutes in Houston for his request, actually. He texted me night four and asked if we could talk, so we talked about him and his situation. And other than that, it's just been kind of, you know, regular communication. But that was specifically about him and how he fits in and what I saw and what I thought. This door opens from both sides. So, you know, players often come in and talk. So if there's ever a question. And like I said, in Houston, he texted me. The following day, I went and found him. We talked. I'll talk to anybody on this team about anything. You know, he's moving in the right direction. Had already had it in my mind and communicated to him that we were going to try and use him in a little more high leverage situation. And then it's just a matter of finding the right times to bring him in and bring him back into the fold late in the game.
Breaking ball lifted to deep right center field. Back goes Robertson. Track, wall, Bellinger's done it again. The kid takes Andrew Miller deep to break the tie in the eighth inning. Hammers another down the right field line. It's gone again. Another two-home run game for Cody Bellinger.
Wasn't as sharp as I'd like to be and was able to kind of grind through it. A pretty poor bat. Obviously, it's easy to look back and see what I could have done differently. Just overall, I need to be sharper and, you know, make better pitches. It's pretty easy to look back and see, you know, where I was. And then, you know, even then, you know, I felt like if I had executed a good one, you know, I like my chances. And, you know, I left it in a spot where he can hit it pretty well. And, you know, he's a hot hitter with a pretty good approach right now. So, you know, it's easy to point back and see where that one went well or did not go well. You know, there were a couple flashes where it was pretty good, but it came back to bite me at the end.
No, están ahí hablando cosas y entonces después con Ron siguieron comentando algo y entonces me rebajé al nivel de ellos y los saludé así.
People were talking to me before the home run and then after the home run they kept talking. I reacted that way, I skipped to the level.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Really, really appreciate you being part of it. Want you to not just be a passive part of it, although that's always fine. If you'd rather just sit and listen, that's kind of cool because I got lots to say. But I want you to be an active participant if you've got something to say as well. Don't be shy. We don't bite here. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. You can also tweet to us, Sports Radio 106.5. And you can also Facebook comment to us at 106.5 The Ticket on all of the things that we are talking about today. We're going to get some baseball talk going early today. You know, it's so weird, Kush. The prep show prep was a lot harder today because for the last 2 weeks, certainly we have been talking about, you know, the NBA Finals almost exclusively. When one of the teams that we cover and where there are a lot of fans of in our listening area are in a championship finals or a World Series or whatever the case might be, you know, we're all over it.
Sure.
But now that they're over, it's like, what else is going on? Oh, yeah, baseball. We got to start talking about that a little bit. Might have to start sprinkling in a little bit of summer NFL news as well.
Yeah, minicamps going on.
Minicamps are going on indeed. And there's, you know, a little bit of controversy in a few different places. And we can get into all of that. So we're going to talk a little baseball in the very early going here in just a couple of minutes, in fact. We're going to talk to Matt Mowry, who is on the Tigers beat for the Oakland Press. And we're going to talk about K-Rod. What exactly, and I'll ask Matt this, Kush, but what exactly does Francisco Rodriguez have to say? What does he get to complain about being in the mop-up role too long? You know, not being the, you know, the go-to closer, given the way he has performed this season, given the way he performed in the closer's role particularly, how is he honestly complaining when you have done what he has done? You're sitting there with an ERA of 6.23, and you have blown saves, and you have blown opportunity after opportunity. How are you going to go into the manager's office Yeah, how come I'm not closing? And I didn't understand Spanish there, so a lot of what was going on. No, that was Yasiel Puig Spanish at the end, bigger part on that one. But I don't really hear too much from K-Rod either, perhaps because I can't understand him either. But I do know that you played Ausmus, who said he came in, wanted to know what's going on. What the hell does he think's going on, Kush?
Basically, and I would have obviously put that in there if there was. This was not a recorded thing. This is something that K-Rod a couple of earlier Tuesday, so this would have been before the game on Tuesday.
Before last night's game. Right,
yeah. I was talking to a reporter at the Detroit News, and basically, well, I'll just read some of the quick quotes. Quote, am I being judged on 10 outings? What about the four other 400-plus saves? What about the almost 1,000 appearances? I've made my living.
That guy isn't here anymore.
Exactly. I've made my living in tough, precious situations. I have not made my living being a mop-up guy. And there's basically more where that came from.
You're 35 now. You don't have what you used to have, and you're not getting those outs like you did in the other 400 save opportunities, et cetera. I mean, seriously, what is the guy talking about here? I mean, you got to understand, and you got to be realistic. And I know everybody. I'll say this about him: I give him credit for wanting to compete. There are a lot of guys, if they're late in their career. And I think, you know, even at 35, he's late in his career based on what he can do and what he can't do anymore and what he has done and what he hasn't been able to do anymore. There's a lot of guys who would just say,
"Yeah,
I'm cashing my check. I'm good to go. I'll do what they need me to do. I'll go where they want as long as I get the money. I'm good to go. I still got a job. Then I'm fine." He doesn't like that. He wants to compete. I'll give him credit for that. He wants to compete, and he wants to be in a pressure situation. Good for him. He doesn't have any reason to, you know, beyond just personal competitiveness, which I will never criticize. Personal competitiveness and willingness to challenge yourself and your opponents and even your teammates for opportunities, that is a good thing. And I will give Francisco Rodriguez credit for that. But the bottom line is, if you're not getting the job done anymore, well, you don't get to do that job anymore.
Exactly. Real quick, before we get Matt Mowry up on the line here for this, you know, in this case, this is the CBS Sports.com article on this thing, and I love this real quick paragraph. It's just the reality of the situation needs a little more than just his past. You can't just say something about being judged on 400 career saves, because by that logic, someone should sign Lee Smith to close games right now.
Yeah, bingo, and that's what I'm talking about. Or Dennis Eckersley or somebody else. You know, the bottom line is, you used to be tremendous. You're not anymore. You know what? I'll give you a better comparison. And go ahead and get Matt. We'll bring Matt Mowry up on the line here in a second. But there are guys who, in the prime of their careers, were number four hitters. They were cleanup hitters. They were big time 35 plus home run a year guys. And then they got older, and the swing got a little bit slower, and the power got just a little bit weaker. And suddenly now you can't bat fourth anymore. It's too crucial. We're going to bat you sixth. And then as they get a little bit older, but still good enough to be in the lineup, you might be down at 7 or 8. That's just the nature. You don't get to say, oh, I hit 500 home runs in my career. How come I'm not still the cleanup hitter? Well, I used to hit 340 on a regular basis. How come I'm not the number three hitter? Well, because you're hitting 240 now. So we had to drop you in the order. That's just the way that it is. And if Francisco Rodriguez doesn't understand that, well, then I don't know what to say to him. You know, you got two choices here. Pitch where they tell you to pitch in non-crucial situations, because in crucial situations you've been brutal. Pitch when we tell you to pitch, or take the train. Just you know, catch one out of town. It's all good. We can't keep putting our season on the line. Our season in your hands, when you continue to butcher things, you know, not that this, it's not, you know, not literally, of course,
yeah,
the season.
It's
day by day. You're in a division fight right now. You're just a couple of games behind the second place team. You're four games behind the first place team. You're certainly right there. It's all there for the taking. Every game matters, and if you keep blowing games, well, then that's bad on us.
To me, it's as simple as this. Kudos to you. You're fourth on the all-time save list. Problem is, that guy is not pitching for the 2017 Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, I already said that part. Come on. Is this live or Memorex? Matt Mowry joining us now from the Oakland Press, covers those Detroit Tigers for the press, joining us with a little bit of an update on where things are. In fact, there's a few different news items to get to, including the Francisco Rodriguez conversation with Mr. Brad Ausmus. Matt, how are you this afternoon?
Not bad. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. Real good. We appreciate it. You know, we got some stuff to talk about with Fulmer, and want to talk a little bit about the shuffling of the rotation, but let's get to K-Rod, only because his is the most interesting, because, you know, when you got a complaining player, it certainly, you know, makes a lot of headlines. Jim Cushlin just read some of this on the air, and I'm going to read it again from the Detroit News. If you think Francisco Rodriguez is content with his current role in the bullpen, you don't understand how hot his competitive fire burns. He is far from content, quote. That's a question that really irritates me, he said before the game yesterday. Am I being judged on 10 outings? What about the other 400-plus saves? What about almost 1,000 appearances? I've made my living in tough pressure situations. I've not made my living being a mop-up guy. But, Matt, isn't it, you know, and I don't know if Brad Ausmus can say it to him this way, but right now he's pitching like a mop-up guy. And if you're pitching like a mop-up guy, you play mop-up guy. You start pitching like high-pressure guy, and we'll put you back into the role of high-pressure guy. Isn't that about fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things that Brad even said after the game, that he understood where Francisco was coming from, and he understood all of the points that K-Rod had made in talking to Chris McCoskey from the Detroit News. But still, the fact remains that, as you said, he has to pitch like a back-end guy. Now, Brad has said over and over again since he, you know, took K-Rod out of the role of reliever or out of the role of closer that they're going to need him or they're better with him pitching at the back end of games when he's pitching well.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they automatically just put him in there, you know, no matter how he's pitching. But the fact remains, as we've talked about, I believe, on here before, that they're going to have somebody else to pitch some innings in those back-end slots, so they don't end up killing Alex Wilson and, you know, and Shane Green over the next 3 or 4 months. He's going to have to factor in somehow over the next, you know, couple of weeks. He's going to have to get himself to a point where he can be trusted to pitch in those innings. Now, I guess the point of contention is, what does he feel like he has to prove to get back into that role, and what does Brad feel like he has to prove? And I think, as Brad said, you know, they had the conversation in Houston, and he put him in a higher leverage situation against Kansas City, and he gave up the home run to Hosmer. Well, that's one pitch, and so that doesn't necessarily automatically mean, no, he's not ready, but it certainly doesn't erase the question mark you have in the back of your mind, whether you're a fan or whether you're the manager looking at it going, can I trust this guy? K-Rod's got a point. He's got a track record as long as, you know, a page an entire page in Wikipedia. If you look up, you know, his stats and Baseball Reference, it, you know, you have to scroll all the way down to get to the bottom of it. Everybody understands that's the guy that they signed, but that's, as you said, that's not exactly the guy that they signed, because he's not blowing 96 mile an hour fastballs anymore like it was with the Angels. He's tricking people. That's the way he's getting people out. And if he's not tricking them, they're hitting him really hard. So, as you said, they can't necessarily just mortgage their future and pat him on the head and say, it's been a great career, please go out there and blow some more games for us. They can't do that. And if he can't live with that, if he can't live with some sort of modified role, if he can't live with being, you know, maybe sometimes a mop-up guy, maybe sometimes, you know, filling in the eighth inning or in the seventh inning, if he has to be closer or nothing, they may get to a point where they just have to go, well, we can't make you the closer anymore, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to go someplace else.
Yeah, I'm sorry, and we're gonna have to go in a different direction than you. If you can't handle the role that we've got you in now, it's really all we can afford to use you for now. I mean, I made a comparison. Excuse me, before I made a comparison before, you know, about the power hitter, the guy with 500 career home runs. And guess what? When you're at 35 to 36 and your bat speed is slower and you're not hitting 40 a year, now you're hitting, you know, 19 or 20 a year or 22 or 23 a year, you might be the sixth place hitter. You can't complain that you're in a non-pressure situation like cleanup anymore, because you used to do it all the time, and I've got 500 career home runs. There comes a point where you're not what you once were. Father Time is undefeated, not saying it's your fault, not saying you're not competitive, not saying you're not trying your hardest, but you can't bop them out like you used to. I got to drop you in the order. Well, in relief, you know, pitchers terms, or you know, in relief pitchers parlance, dropping you in the order means moving you up higher into the innings. You're going to move up into the, you're going to pitch in the seventh, you're going to pitch in the eighth, you're going to pitch in games that are just that are decided already, because we just cannot stand to leverage you in the cleanup spot, if you will, of pitching, which is the closer.
Absolutely, and that's the risk that the Tigers have been running over the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years, however long this streak has gone on, where they've had older teams, where they've, you know, managed to sign higher priced guys who are maybe definitively on the downside of their career. I mean, anybody remember how brutal the defense was for Maglio Ordóñez in right field over the last 3 seasons that he played? It was awful. But they weren't going to take Maglio out simply because he still had the bat speed. We're kind of running into that same situation that you just talked about with Victor Martinez at cleanup.
That's a great point.
He's definitively on the downside of his career. And Brad's frankly running into that same thing, because if you ask him about, are you ever going to take Victor out? Would you ever... You know, there's the stock answer that, you know, they need Victor in there to break up all the right-handed hitters, which is partly true. And certainly, if anyone's going to be able to protect Miguel Cabrera, it's probably going to be Victor Martinez more easily than it is J.D. Martinez. However, you may also get to a point in that situation where you have to say, look, Victor, we got to drop you in the order. We can't have you clogging up the bases, you know, and slowing things down and not driving in runs in the cleanup spot, because we're just, our offense is not producing the way it is. And again, you may get to that situation where he doesn't understand that. He doesn't get it. And that's the thing with ultra competitive athletes like that. They never get it. They're the last person to realize that they're not on the level that they were before. Those guys still think that they're the same, you know, 24-year-old, 25-year-old, 26-year-old, until it smacks them in the face that they just can't do it. And at that moment that finally comes for all of them, that's the moment where they usually hang it up. And as we said, you know, they've tried that record over and over and over again at the closer spot with the Tigers, because they're consistently, you know, bringing someone in from the outside who's at the tail end of their career. Valverde was okay for a couple of years, and then he hit that wall. You know, you bring in Joe Nathan, and he apparently hit that wall as he came into town. You know, and now you've got Francisco Rodriguez, who was okay last year, and now has hit that wall. And it's just going to be, if you're going to bring in Band-Aids constantly to fix that problem, you're going to have to tear them off sometime. And that's kind of what they have to do in this situation.
Yeah,
if he's not going to be a...
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you were pausing there. I think that's very well said. And by the way, I will never criticize a man for his competitiveness. You know, as I said to Jim before you came on, Matt, you know, there are a lot of guys in a Francisco Rodriguez type situation where they're late in their career. You're 35 years old. You've done this for 15 years, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? I'm getting paid. Doesn't matter to me. They can pitch me wherever they want me. I'm just cashing checks now as long as I can before I can't pitch anymore. And he's not doing that. He's saying, not only do I want to cash my checks, I want to earn them, and I want to earn them in the right positions, in the right situations where I've always earned them. I can still do this. That competitive juice, to me, is a compliment. It's a good thing. It's an asset to have, and I have no problem with that. It's just that somebody needs to bring a reality check to him to say, look, we appreciate that very much. And I'm sure that's what Ausmus has said to him, you know, in that conversation that he described. You know, that I appreciate that you want that so badly, and if you really can still do that, we will definitely make use of it. But that competitiveness, you know, isn't always matched by the performance right now, and we just kind of have to accept where we are.
Sure, sure. And I think, too, like you said, that competitive fire, as long as it keeps burning and you know, as long as you can extend that, but that also kind of goes in with that belief that I believe I can still do that. And you got to kind of wonder, when a guy finally loses that belief that they can do it, once they realize that no longer does the body have the skill to do what it used to do, then you kind of wonder how quickly that competitive fire goes away when they understand finally that they cannot be the best. And that's a hard realization for a lot of those guys. And
yeah,
you got to imagine that it goes away fast at that point.
Yeah, I'll get, you know, another example, just since, you know, football mini camps are going on right now. You look at a guy like Darrell Revis, who, you know, Revis Island was named because nobody wanted to be out there on his island. He was such a lockdown, shutdown corner. And if you ask him at the age of 31, he's still the same guy. He can still do that. But if you ask everybody else, well, 32 teams right now say no. They have not signed him. He is a free agent here at minicamp time. Maybe somebody will if an injury happens, but he's a guy that I firmly believe, like K-Rod, he thinks he can still close, you know, just to make the transfer over. He can still do that sort of thing. But in reality, if you watch game tape last year, he was toasted far, far more than he ever had in his career. And there comes a time where other people realize you have slowed down, but you don't. And much like K-Rod's fastball, you know, Durrell has slowed down, and he doesn't get it, and neither does K-Rod. Matt Mowry is our guest. He is from the Oakland Press covering the Detroit Tigers. Jim Kushlin is with us as well. We got more pitching news there. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, well stated. More pitching news. The other piece of news, and we'll get to the reason why here in a minute, but a bit of a rotation jumble for the Tigers that kind of starts today. Give us the rundown of what's changed.
Well, they moved Michael Fulmer back a couple of days simply because over the last couple of starts he'd given up 5 earned runs, and it was uncharacteristic, and he didn't know why, and you could tell he was answering all the questions after his last start, but he was perplexed. He even mentioned at one point, maybe I'm tipping pitches, I don't know. He said, I have never been hit that hard in my career, and I don't know why. And so they ran him out to the hospital and actually didn't take him on the road trip to Boston. They kept him here, and they gave him an MRI on his pitching shoulder, and they came up with some inflammation. There's no structural damage, which is obviously very, very good, but there was a inflammation of a bursa sac, and so they gave him a cortisone shot, and he said yesterday that he felt good as new, and he was throwing a slider. But the fact that his slider was kind of flat over the last couple of starts was a little worrisome, and that's, you know, really where he makes his hay. And he said throwing it yesterday was felt about as good as it has all year. So, you know, he even mentioned that it might be a blessing in disguise that they found this now and they kind of found out what the reason was for it. It's not something, as Brad Austin said yesterday, these days you get an MRI if you fall off a bike. It's just one of those things that they do almost routinely with anybody, just run them under the machine and see what comes up on the pictures. And, you know, it is good that they found this, but as Brad said, there's absolutely no concern in his mind at this point with Fulmer going forward. You know, they've addressed this. They've given him a couple extra days. They've given him the cortisone shot, and they'll just move forward from here. So it's one of those things that you kind of, I guess, breathe a sigh of relief that it's only that and not something far worse. But it's at least good to know what it was.
We're talking with Matt Mowry of the Oakland Press. He covers the Detroit Tigers on their beat. Just real quick now, as I mentioned, and we talk about this almost each time we talk, just the state of the race and where it is now. And the race in the American League Central is still a tight one. The Twins still shockingly, well, I don't know if I'll say shockingly that they're still on top. It's just that nobody has surged to take them down, which everybody kind of expected. It appears that the Indians are experiencing a World Series hangover, and maybe the Cubs are doing the same thing at 32-32 in the National League. But because the Indians are not surging at all, the Twins still lead the division by 2 games over the Indians. The Tigers are, of course, 2 back of the Indians. Still, as we now are, what, 3 weeks away or a little bit less from the 4th of July and getting close to the All-Star break, are we still kind of feeling like this is something the Tigers can do? Or is it still kind of like, you know, as soon as the Indians actually do catch fire, it's over?
It seems, like you said, I think we talk about this every single time that I come on, and it seems like it's the same feeling because nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. Bingo, that's right.
Every one of these teams is still spinning the wheels, playing right about .500 baseball. None of them are pulling away from anybody else. I mean, a team will go on a 2 or 3 game losing streak, then go on a 2 or 3 game winning streak. And so the numbers change minutely from day to day, but realistically, there's no separation here at all. And so, yeah, everything is still on the table for all of these teams. I mean, the Twins could conceivably, you had to think that the Twins were coming into the summer thinking, you know, we'll see what we can do, and then we'll end up selling at the deadline, and the guy like Irvin Santana was probably going to be on the block. And now they're probably thinking, maybe we have a chance to win this, which is just weird thinking, you know, that, because I think everybody kind of had them pegged for at least 3rd or 4th in the division, but now they may be the team that maybe goes out and adds something and tries to see if they can make a run at a division. And as you said, with the Indians, it's a little more perplexing. It's not a thing that they need. It's just kind of getting out of the doldrums, and it's kind of the same way with the Tigers. I think there's no, if you look at their team, yeah, you could maybe, you know, add to the bullpen, and maybe you could get an extra starter here, you know, to throw into the fourth or fifth spot and try to hope that bolsters the rotation. But it's not necessarily a thing that they need. More, they just need to play at their potential, and I think that's the thing with the top two teams that everybody expected to be the contenders in this division, is that they're just not playing as well as their talent indicates that they should. And so, if one of those teams goes on a run, they could effectively box out the other team and make it real hard for them to continue being in the race, because I don't know that both of them are going to go on a run simultaneously. So yeah, I think everything is still on the table for all three of those teams.
Yeah, the American League Central, you say all three of us, but I mean, what the hell? Make it five. They have the second tightest race in baseball from first to last. Only the National League Central, with the Brewers in front of the Cubs by a game, and then bringing up the rear is the Reds at 29-35, only four games back. And in the American League Central, the White Sox, who are last, are only six games back. So, you know, again, still just in the, you know, completing the second week of June. Quite frankly, it's anybody's race, and I'm not saying I think the White Sox are good enough to make it, but nobody has put them in the basement and just made them disappear the way they have in so many of the other divisions, where the last place teams are 14, 17, 16 games out.
Yeah, and I think by this point of the season, and I know a lot of people will point at the second wild card for making things more competitive, and it has over the last couple of years since that's been in place.
Yeah.
But I think one of the other things is, most years at this point in the season, you've got somebody that's just buried, somebody that's done, that you know is done. And there really aren't that many teams in baseball right now that are completely, you know, you mentioned that there are some teams that are 14.
Well, yeah, I mentioned Padres and Giants are both 14.5 back in the West. They're not going to come anywhere near the Dodgers.
Sure.
The Phillies are 17.5 back in the NL East. And then I mentioned the 16, that's the A's. And of course, the entire division in the West, I mean, is buried from the Astros. I mean, the second and third place teams are both 11 games back, and then the Athletics are 16 back. So I think it's safe to call some of those teams buried at this point, but none of those reside in the American League Central.
Sure, but I think in some of those situations, though, I mean, especially the NL East, you know, the Nationals are certainly running away with it. It's more what the leaders have done in some of those races by extending their own lead, especially with the Astros and Nationals. Whereas, you know, some of those teams might still be, you know, hovering around 500. Compared to some of the other teams in the rest of the divisions. I think with the American League Central, it's just some of these teams are killing themselves. I mean, it's less about what other teams in the Central are doing. It's more about how, you know, mediocre they're playing.
By the way, the Astros hold that 11-game lead over the next two teams in their division, despite losing their last three. They're on a three-game losing streak, and they still have 11-game leads over the second and third-place teams. And as I say, 12 over the Mariners and then 16 over the Athletics. Last thing, what about the Yankees? How did they get so good so quickly? I remember talking to you about a month ago and talking about, the Yankees stink now, just because I expected the Yankees to stink this year. And we know they're building. We know they're starting over with a lot of young talent. Aaron Judge is simply taking baseball by storm. It's not just him. But they're doing this despite the struggles of Tanaka. Sabathia has been inconsistent and now injured. He left the game yesterday. But the Yankees are sitting there at 38-24, second best record in the American League, which I just did not expect.
Well, yeah, and I think when you look at the models of ways to rebuild, there's the obvious one that the Astros took and that the Cubs took more recently, where they just absolutely tanked, bottomed out, got some high picks, filled up the draft, filled up the minor league system through the draft. And then once those young kids started percolating to the top, then they started adding some. I think the Yankees did it in a different mode. They started paring away. And I think this is honestly a way, when you look at it, that the Tigers could potentially look at their, you know, slower rebuild over the next couple of years. The Yankees started paring away some of the salaries. They would get to the trade deadline and in July and say, well, we're not out of it, but this guy's not going to be with us next year. So we'll ship him out and we'll get a minor leaguer in return. And then you do the same thing next year. So it takes a couple of years of, you know, we're kind of in it, but we're not in it. We're not going to really do much, you know, movement wise, except maybe get rid of some expiring contracts. And they've done the rebuild a lot more quickly than the other method, where you have to really bottom out you know, get to the absolute bottom of the barrel. They've done it in very much a different way, and they've done it, as you said, very quickly. I don't think anybody expected them to be. I think people saw the youngsters that they had coming and thought that they would be an exciting team, but I don't know that they thought that they would be a competitive team, at least at the top end of the, you know, competitors for the American League, simply because, as you said, that their rotation is not, I don't think, set up to be,
no,
you know, a top contender. They had, certainly, with all of the youngsters that they have coming up, they're going to be very exciting, but I don't know that they have, you know, I still don't know if they have it for the long haul this season, but they're certainly, proving out that.
Real quick on this, because I know you got to run, but where did this monster Aaron Judge come from? 6'7", 282 pounds. You know, a year ago, he played in 27 games, hit 179, and had four home runs. He's now played 60 games this year. And he's a Triple Crown winner. I mean, if it ended now. 341,
right.
22, 49, hitting nearly 500-foot bombs. We knew Bryce Harper was coming. We knew Mike Trout was coming. We knew where some of the top young prospects were coming before they got here. I didn't know about Aaron Judge. And I know you cover the Tigers and not the Yankees, so I wouldn't expect you to know everything about him. But, I mean, how out of the blue is this performance?
Well, and even when you look at a lot of the prospects that the Yankees had coming, people knew that Gary Sanchez was coming eventually. And they probably kept him in the minors longer than maybe they needed to. And so when he burst onto the scene last year, I don't think it was a huge surprise to anyone, because he'd been tearing up the minors for years. You know, and you've got Bird in that same system, and you've got a lot of the arms that they've had come through, whether it be Severino or any of those kind of guys, Betances, who have come through, and especially because it's such a huge media market, you hear about a lot of those names. And Judge was not necessarily the first name that was off people's tongues when talking about Yankees prospects. And so, yeah, he has kind of just flashed out of nowhere. And it's one of those where you know with a player, and you kind of knew it with Sanchez last year, the regression bug is going to hit at some point. But at this point with Judge, it's just such a great story. And he seems like, he seems like a very well-adjusted, nice kid, too, which is part of the reason I think people are taking to the story, you know, as well as they are. But, yeah, he has just come out of nowhere, and he's a beast. I mean, some of the home runs he's been hitting, you just go, that's like video game stuff.
Well, you know, when I look at that guy, it reminds me of Adam Dunn. You know, Adam Dunn, it was like 6'7", 6'8", whatever the heck it was, and 250, 60 pounds, just a bull. But, he'd hit you, 40 home runs, but strike out 200 times and bat 215. This guy is hitting, as I say, 341. Now, I would imagine there's going to be a time where, as you say, he plateaus, and American League pitchers figure him out a little bit, and then there's an adjustment back that he'll have to make, and that'll be the true test as to whether or not he'll be a great hitter going forward. But nobody has figured him out yet, and they're not 20 games in. This isn't just a hot start. They're 60 games in, and that would indicate that this guy's got some real ability to do some things for a long time to come. We'll let it go there because, Matt, I know you're busy and you got to get to work. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Matt Mowry at the Oakland Press. We'll check in with you again soon, sir.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
You do the same. Thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, there's going to come a time, obviously. We all know this. It happens. You know, a hitter gets off to a hot start. Pitchers are giving up home runs. Then they start looking at him a little more closely.
Sure.
They figure out what he swings at, what he doesn't. They look at a little tape. They adjust, and he goes into a big slump, and then he either adjusts back or, he's a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing flash in the pan from this guy, at least right now, through 60 games.
No, I'm not either. And what's interesting, and you guys kind of both brought it up, this is why, really for about a month now, for me anyway, I've been looking at where the Yankees are and I'm thinking, man, they're one hole. If they really want to keep this pace and keep doing what they're apparently doing, then their one hole is go out and get some kind of starting pitcher. Obviously, we're in mid-June now. Originally, I had said I wouldn't be surprised if that pitcher's into New York by the end of June, the way this is going. But since they keep sitting on top, three games up on Boston, who is almost universally picked to win that division this year, with a Baltimore that's now under 500 and a couple of teams, I got to believe I still think we're a few weeks to a month tops away, and we'll be hearing how the Yankees have traded for some kind of starter, just because they are apparently this ahead of it, and that's really their one blatant kind of hole. I mean, in a short playoff series, I'd probably favor the opponent just by pitching matchups, so I fully expect them to make a move to solidify their spot, because the way the American League is going right now, Bob, you have Houston doing what they're doing, and then you have the Yankees. And unless a run is coming from whoever wants to take this central, that's going to be your 1-2 probably.
Which
the way
would
it's
still
going.
Have to be the Indians. I just cannot picture another 100 games going by. It's 60 in right now, 100 games going by of Minnesota staying atop the Indians.
Right,
the
and
Indians
as we're saying that, coming, they got 20 runs on the Mariners last night.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, too, though, about the Yankees, and I know we got to get our break, we're way past it here, but I saw a headline today that really made me pause and said, you know what, it's true. This might be the least hateable Yankees team we have seen in maybe a decade or two, or longer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One thing we always hated about the Yankees is, well, they were richer than everybody else. They're playing in that media market where they make more money on their radio and TV deals than everybody else does combined in their division and so on. They got, you know, the average, payroll is $75, $80 million. The Yankees are at 150.
Right.
The average payroll
is
110. The Yankees are at 210. And they just buy championships, we all said.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some personalities that we could not stand. Now you're looking at a team that wasn't bought unless, like you said, now at the deadline, they might have to make a trade. And even that's not free agency. That's trading for a starter. But you look at Gardner, Hicks, Judge, Holiday, Castro, Gregorius. This isn't some sort of a murderer's row that was bought and paid for.
Right.
That nobody else could buy, and therefore the Yankees have an unfair advantage in an unlevel playing field in a non-salary cap sport. They're doing it like everybody else is doing it, and right now they're doing it better. So it's almost impossible to hate this team as much as, you know, you hate the NY, and you hate the obnoxious fans, and you hate the history. You know, I mean, unless you're a fan.
And I'll be freely admit, I'll still find a way to be a hater of them. But yeah, the animosity
is a lot
less.
You do have to look hard.
Right, I have to work a lot harder than I did, say, circa 1998.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. All right, let me get that quick timeout now for a SportsCenter right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
By calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. 3:52 now. We've got just a few minutes left in this first hour. Second hour, by the way, coming up at 4:30 at the bottom of the next hour. We're going to talk a little more baseball, but this time Indian style. Matt Lodi will join us from IndioSportsInsiders.com and the Associated Press out of Cleveland. Find out what is wrong with the defending American League champs, why they're spinning their wheels at right around 500 in the same way that their opponents in the World Series last year are. They're literally right at 32-32.
Yeah, and because
of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, and because of the spinning the wheels, at least on the Indian side, suddenly a four-game series coming up starting Friday against Minnesota, even for mid-June, is suddenly a bigger deal.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, right now, personally, I think every game is a big deal, but you're right. You get a chance to take and maybe especially because they're up two games on you, you know, take some of the starch out of their shorts. Remind them of where they are. I think they're probably still really, really surprised that they are where they are. And maybe a reminder of, you know what, you don't belong up here, and we're going to show you that, a 3-1 or, God willing, a four games. That would really remind them of who they are. Take some of the steam out and watch them start to level off and taper off and settle into the middle or back of the division where they belong.
And at this rate, an Indians taking 3 out of 4, it's a four-game series because there's a doubleheader Saturday, taking 3 out of 4 or, as you said, God willingly, sweep all four, and suddenly we're here on Monday talking about a first-place Indians, if that happens.
Which is exactly what we should be talking about here in the summer months,
I agree.
Especially as we push toward July. Hey, Tim in Toledo, want to talk a little Yankees with us, as he always does. He is a resident Northwest Ohio Yankee fan on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Tim, what's up, man?
Hi, Bob. How are you and Jim today?
Good,
doing
brother.
Good.
What's on your mind with you and your Yanks just
on
fire?
Two things. First of all, you and Jim have to get over this grudge you have with the Yankees, okay?
I can't help it. I was raised in an American League city. It's like part of my upbringing.
I'm the one that should hold a grudge.
Why?
In 1997, in the playoff to get into the World Series, Sandy Alomar hit a home run off Mariano Rivera, and we didn't get in.
Well, I feel really bad for you that in 97, when the Indians went to the World Series, you guys didn't get there, considering that starting in 98, the latest dynastic run of Yankeedom started. So, I really feel bad for you.
It actually started in 96.
Yeah. Yeah, we interrupted it.
Then we interrupted it. There you go. Thank you. We interrupted your latest run of four world championships, for crying out loud. Yeah, you know what? Cry me a river.
We could have won 5 in a row just like another Yankee team did in the 50s.
No, I don't think we'll be talking about that very long.
I'm willing to overlook
it. But I'll tell you what. No, and also what Jim said a few minutes ago about, you know, hating those teams, I think it is inbred in a lot of people to hate the Yankees if you are a competitor of the Yankees. And quite frankly, just if you're not, you know, in a market the size of New York where they were able to buy talent for so many years. You make a mistake in drafting, no big deal. We'll get the best free agent next year and make up for that. You make a mistake in a trade, no big deal. We'll sign somebody to undo that damage too because you have unlimited resources with Steinbrenner in the big city. Now, as I said to Jim, I'm not hating the Yankees, even though I'm always going to hate the NY and the pinstripes. I'm not hating them for them and for the way they're doing things right now, and that I guess that's a step toward progress.
Well, you ought to criticize the Tigers then, because the only team with a bigger payroll than the Tigers is the Dodgers.
That is true.
That is true. And I have criticized, and I will continue to, the free spending ways. Now, although I also understood it to a certain extent, before Mike Yelich died, everybody knew, you know, that it was his dream to get that ring, you know, before his time ran out. And we knew, and they knew, and we talked to a lot of Detroit folks who knew that they were going to mortgage the future and overspend in the present, and they're even going to leave an empty cupboard for, you know, for a few years to come in order to make that run. And they had a chance, and they really did, but it didn't work out. Now, that's not an excuse. Well, I guess it is an excuse, but it's not how they have always done business the way it is with the Yankees and the Dodgers, and that's how they've always done business.
Well, one last thing.
Yeah.
I really don't believe the Yankees should make a trade at the deadline.
Even for a starter?
I have spent years restocking the farm system,
yeah,
straightening out the damn payroll,
yeah,
and I think they're at least 1 year ahead of schedule, and I think they should just put the brakes on and take it easy. If we get there with the team we have, that's fine. If we don't, we're going to be better next year.
I was just going to ask you, Tim, in a follow-up kind of manner, if that means there's a weakness in the rotation and it costs you, say, a division series or an ALCS, and it sounds like the answer is yes, you'd be fine with that.
Well, you know, they criticize the Yankees' rotation, but the Yankees are the only team in Major League Baseball with four starters who have ERAs below four. The only one over that is Tanaka, and he's just stunk.
Yeah, and here's the real part, the real, you know, dangerous thing, if you don't like the Yankees, is Tanaka is showing signs of coming out of that. Just, what was it, Monday? No, I think it was Monday, wasn't it, that
yeah,
he went six innings, gave up four hits, and just one run, I think, and
yep,
showed some signs of coming back to, you know, what he can be and has been.
Well, last night, CeCe, who's been pitching really well, he strained a hamstring last night and had to take him out after four innings.
Right, right.
So that could be a problem, but we're going to have a good team this year, but next year we're going to be better because please let us say goodbye to Chase Headley and play this guy we got from the Cubs at third base.
Hey, who's going to win the MVP? Is it Trout or is your boy Judge going to hold on like this?
Well, I think Judge has an advantage because Trout's out hurt.
Right, I know, but he's coming back. He might be back by the All-Star break was the latest news I saw earlier this afternoon. Trout could come back earlier than expected. And if he comes back and starts doing the Mike Trout type things he was doing before he went down, it's going to be one hell of a race for the MVP, I think, in the second half.
Well, you got to give Judge a lot of credit because as he came up through the farm system, each year he had to repeat part of the season before, and they kept moving him up. Well, it's the same thing with New York. When he came up last August and hit a home run at first at bat, then he proceeded to strike out every other time for the balance of the season.
Right, right.
Over the winter.
That's what was so weird, like I said, is I kind of just looked at his numbers last year in 27 games. He hit 179.
Yep, yep.
And now he's in 60 games, suddenly he's hitting 341. I mean,
yep,
something happened, and he's getting a lot more selective in his pitches, and obviously when he finds the one he likes.
Well, they sent him down to Tampa over the winter for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And they worked on pitch recognition with him.
Yeah, that,
and he obviously learned one hell of a lot over the winter.
Yep, you can certainly see that. There's no doubt about it. The question is, as I said before, when a pitcher's making an adjustment to him, which I think probably should have started happening by now, is he going to be able to adjust back? And that's what the second half will tell us. Hey, Tim, got to run, my man. Thanks for the call, buddy.
One last thing before I go.
Yeah.
The major reason I'm a Yankee fan, the household I grew up in,
yeah,
you either had to be a Yankee fan or you were encouraged to run away and join the damn circus.
Well, you should have gone to the Big Top. At least you'd have a little credibility.
Yes, thanks now there call. Is no more circus.
You're right. The Ringling Brothers is done now, but at least you could have had a career for a while there.
Political correctness is destroying our culture. Goodbye.
You better believe it is. I will agree with you there 100%. Hey, thanks for the call, brother. Appreciate it. Tim in Toledo, our resident Yankee fan. Fun guy. Okay. Although I think I would rather be called a circus performer than a Yankees fan. Honestly, I think credibility-wise, I have more as a circus performer. I guess it depends on what event. Okay, here's what we got. We're going to get a quick time. We're going to come back. Got a couple of NFL stories to talk about and more kind of fallout slash, it's not really fallout from the finals as much as it is movement into the offseason. Movement into the offseason that I think we need to discuss regarding the National Basketball Association, the dynastic in-the-making Warriors, the Cavaliers trying to figure out what to do to close the gap, and more. We hit a little bit of that yesterday. We'll talk a little bit more about it coming up after the top of the hour Sports Center. Then, back to baseball, as I noted, we'll go to Cleveland and talk to Matt Lodi of Northeast Ohio SportsInsiders.com about the Indians and their kind of stagnant play as of late. All of that coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
There's a drive, deep left field, way back, and that ball is gone. J.D. Martinez, a two-run shot. Ground ball, second base, side, it's through a base hit. Here's Castellanos, they're going to try and score him. Go to the play, not in time. The run scores, both runners move up, it's a tie ball game.
2-3 and 4 in the D-backs, ninth inning. Peralta lifts it the other way, pretty deep left field, and it's gone. David Peralta, that's his sixth and his third hit tonight. 7-6 Diamondbacks.
The ones that stick the most are when you lose leads. You know, we did a good job fighting back tonight, getting in, tying the game. Fortunately, they scored in the top of the ninth and then beat us. For a game that looked like it was going entirely Diamondbacks' way, I thought we did a good job turning it around. You know, I've been saying for about a week and a half I want to continue to get him into higher leverage situations because we're a lot better team when he's pitching in those situations successfully. I talked to K-Rod for about 15 minutes in Houston for his request, actually. He texted me the night before and asked if we could talk, so we talked about him and his situation. And other than that, it's just been kind of, you know, regular communication. But that was specifically about him and how he fits in and what I saw and what I thought. This door opens from both sides. So, you know, players often come in and talk. So if there's ever a question. And like I said, in Houston, he texted me the following day. I went and found him. We talked. I'll talk to anybody on this team about anything. You know, he's moving in the right direction. Had already had it in my mind and communicated to him that we were going to try and use him in a little more high leverage situation. And then it's just a matter of finding the right times to bring him in and bring him back into the fold late in the game.
Breaking ball lifted to deep right center field. Back goes Robertson. Track, wall, Bellinger's done it again. The kid takes Andrew Miller deep to break the tie in the eighth inning. Hammers another down the right field line. It's gone again. Another two-home run game for Cody Bellinger.
Wasn't as sharp as I'd like to be and was able to kind of grind through it. A pretty poor bat. Obviously, it's easy to look back and see what I could have done differently. Just overall, I need to be sharper and, you know, make better pitches. It's pretty easy to look back and see, you know, where I was. And then, you know, even then, you know, I felt like if I had executed a good one, you know, I like my chances. And you know, I left it in a spot where he can hit it pretty well. And, you know, he's a hot hitter with a pretty good approach right now. So, you know, it's easy to point back and see where that one went well or did not go well. You know, there were a couple flashes where it was pretty good, but it came back to bite me at the end.
No, estaban ahí hablando cosas y entonces después con Ron siguieron comentando algo y entonces me rebajé al nivel de ellos y los saludé así.
People were talking to me before the home run, and then after the home run they kept talking. I reacted that way. I skipped to the level.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, about that. Yasiel Puig in the Dodgers win over the Indians yesterday goes double bird. Not single, and not even really masked. Not like, you know, really close down by his, you know, his jersey or something like that, you know, or down by his belt or something where it's just like a little tiny flip that nobody could really notice. He held them up, and he flew them proudly for all to see. They cawed and they crowed as they flew away out toward the Indians fans. Why did Yasiel Puig fly those birds at the Indians fans? Because people were talking to me? Did I hear that correctly from the translator?
You did.
Did I lose something in translation? Did he lose something in translation from Spanish to English? I'm hoping there was more than, well, some people were talking to me, and they continued to talk to me after my homer. So I stooped to their level. Did he really say stooped? I'm wondering, too. What is stooped in Spanish? Anybody know?
I honestly don't know. I'm taking the translator's word for it, literally.
I'm wondering if he isn't doing a little bit of translating of his own. You know what I mean? You know, well, can't really figure out how to say this, so I'm just going to paraphrase it and say this. I'm just kind of curious because what the hell does that mean? What kind of a defense is that? I flipped off the paying customers who enabled me to do what I do for a living because they were talking to me. Did he realize that he was on the road? Is Yasiel Puig aware enough? Is he self-aware? Is he conscious enough to know that when you're on the road, the other fans aren't necessarily going to applaud you?
Given his track record, that's an open question.
Yes, it is. The fans in the opposing cities are not going to, nor are they supposed to, applaud you. They're going to boo you. They're going to hiss at you. I don't know if they'd still do that or if that's just a movie or a villain movies. Back when they were doing black and white movies where you're supposed to boo and hiss the villain as he ties the damsel in distress to the railroad track. Hiss. But they're going to boo you. They might even curse at you. They might tell you suck. They might tell you go back to L.A. They may question your manhood. They may question your abilities. And that's part of the business. Because unless they were throwing a bunch of racial slurs at you, you kind of have to expect and accept, two different words, expect it and accept it, that when you're on the road, you're going to hear that stuff. You don't get to go flying birds at them as you round the bases or as you cross home plate. I was really stunned to see that. And, Kush, I've been waiting all morning and afternoon to see what the fallout is going to be. Did I miss it? Was it in your report?
No.
Did baseball do anything about a suspension
as yet? Far as I know, negative. They have not.
I'm keeping my ears on it,
but as of this moment, I haven't seen anything.
This isn't one of those things where I think it would be appealed, like somebody suspended for a hit by pitch, and then they got a fight, and I'm going to appeal it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, with the Harper thing, for example. This is just going to be flat out, here's what you get for doing that. There's no appeal. There's no way to lessen it. This is what you get for doing that. You're going to be suspended for a game or two games and fined $25,000. Something like that has to happen, I would imagine. Otherwise,
that's the speculation right now.
Right. Well, I mean, how could it not be?
Because
otherwise the gates are open. Every player who doesn't like any fan or any heckler could just, right there, pal. And pretty soon the bird becomes the full arm bird, you know, where you smack the elbow, you know, the crick of your arm and fold it up. Yeah, one of those. I mean, honestly, something's got to be done there. And the explanation was, some people were talking to me, and they continued talking to me.
Let's hear from the translator.
Let me have it again.
People were talking to me before the home run, and then after the home run, they kept talking. I reacted that way. I skipped to their level.
Okay, and he did say stoop in there, or at least the translator did. Hard to hear because I guess Dodgers are dropping their plates from their postgame meal in the background, but he did say stoop there.
I'm picturing the appeal. Two-game suspension. We're appealing. All right, come on in. We'll talk. All right, here's the video. Yasiel, you're flipping off our paying customers in full view of television cameras. What's your defense? People were talking to me. You're right. Acquitted. Game suspended. Or excuse me, suspension reduced one game. You only have a one-game suspension now. People can't talk to you. That's terrible. So I stooped to their level. Oh, my gosh. That's, baseball. You know, I don't want to play the hate baseball game right now. I don't. But we do know that the NFL, despite having an off year ratings-wise in this past season, and there was a lot of reasons for that. A lot of people turned away from the NFL because of the Colin Kaepernick thing. A lot of people were upset and offended by that. A lot of people were just paying attention to other things like the presidential election cycle last year as well. The ratings are down. Thursday night games were awful. Color Rush doesn't seem to be a big hit with too many people. The NFL has got a few issues, but despite all of them, they're the king. The NFL is still ruling the roost, I mean, it is about as impenetrable of a force, if you will, as you're going to find in sports. It's a sure thing. If you could buy the NFL on Wall Street, buy it. It's going to continue to produce money for you if you could buy this stock. The NBA, despite everything, despite all of the blowouts in the postseason for the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference, for the Warriors in the Western Conference, and really, you know, there were a couple of interesting games. Probably the last three were pretty doggone interesting in the NBA Finals, but the first two were blowouts. Despite all of that, they're 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 10 times the ratings of their counterparts on the ice, the National Hockey League.
Now, I read that these finals, the five-game finals, was actually the highest-rated finals since Jordan was playing.
Because of anticipation.
Right.
Because of the Warriors and the Cavs, three-match, first time ever, et cetera. The games themselves didn't warrant those kinds of ratings.
Right.
And I know for a fact that the ratings started to drop off after the second and third quarters of games one and two in a big way, because people knew it was a blowout. The Warriors weren't coming back to the pack, if you will. So they started to drop off then. But, yes, the anticipation led to that. So basketball is still sitting in a very good place. Baseball, in my estimation, is still trying to figure out how to keep up with their counterparts.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we just heard the commissioner at the beginning of the season, Rob Manfred, talked about, you know, the speed of play, picking up the pace, messing around and tweaking things at the minor league level, putting runners on second base to start extra innings so they can get those things over with faster, you know, utilizing pitch clocks that are already in the rule books, all those sorts of things. So they know they've got a little bit of a problem. I think they also have a problem when none of their players are recognizable and marketable until, and this is on the recognizable part, not the marketable part, until they flip off people on their way across home plate. Did you see ESPN's top 100 players worldwide, or world 100 athletes, not players, around the world in terms of fame, most well-known, the top 100 players or athletes in the world?
I don't recall the entire list. I do recall it coming out, and I know no baseball guys are on it.
Lionel Messi, Roger Federer, Phil Mickelson, Neymar, Usain Bolt, Kevin Durant, Rafael Nadal, Tiger Woods, they are your top 10. You get into the next 10, you start getting into some football players as well as golfers. Jordan Spieth, well, I said Tiger too, but Jordan Spieth is there. Tom Brady is there. UFC fighter Conor McGregor is there. Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook. On down the line we go. Carmelo Anthony, Dustin Johnson. 47 is Cam Newton. 51 is Chris Paul. Russell Wilson at 55. Manny Pacquiao, who's pretty much done as a fighter, is 60. Or, I beg your pardon, 59. Eli Manning is 60. I can keep going here, but I'm going to get to a point with all of this. I'm going to get to 100, and I'm not going to have said a baseball player's name. Think about that for a moment if you have not already considered that when you looked at this list. Not one MLB star. Not Mike Trout. Not Bryce Harper, not Giancarlo Stanton, not, I don't know, Clayton Kershaw, not Yasiel Puig. None of them cracked the top 100 of the most famous or recognizable. And just to throw it at you here, this is what they said. Who are the most famous athletes on the planet? ESPN's director of analytics devised a formula that combines endorsements with social media following and internet search popularity to create the World Fame 100 rankings. NA means either an athlete doesn't have an official account for a social media site. Okay, that's just getting into the metrics of it all. But the bottom line is, baseball players aren't that popular. Baseball isn't that popular. And one of your most worldwide popular players, Yasiel Puig, being an international player and a bit of a diva, a wild card, a very eccentric personality. One of the guys that might crack a top 100 list like that is making his name known by flying the birds as he crosses home plate. I find it just a little bit troubling from a baseball standpoint that your marketability is in the toilet, and one of your most, even though he might not be one of the very best players, Yasiel Puig is one of the most recognizable guys, and this is the kind of thing he's doing.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back. This is an offshoot of a conversation we've had in the past, and I'm sure we'll again have in the future, about baseball's marketing kind of issue, about the only positive I can even think of for baseball in this whole broad context is, you know, most local markets, their ratings are still slightly going up each year. And that's been true for a good couple years now in the vast majority of local TV markets. It's not translating as much into the stands, and it's certainly not translating into the endorsements and all those things that help with the publicity and the PR and everything. And you know, this goes back to baseball's, I still think, main problem right now, which is getting their players out there. I mean, we had this conversation very recently, you know, regarding not just Mike Trout, but Albert Pujols and his 600th home run. We spent a good half of a show talking about that, and it eventually led into, once again, the context of this issue.
Yeah, and it's kind of a strange thing, and I don't know. This is a little tough for me because I'm of two minds on certain things. One of the ways that you expand your brand is to allow your players to reach out to the fans, to become, I'm trying to think of the word to describe, to become fun. And I'm going to settle for that word because I can't think of a better one right now. What I mean is Jose Bautista's bat flips. You know, Bryce Harper's moonshots, and if he stares at it for a second, those kinds of things, can't lead to bean balls, and how dare you do those sorts of things. There's been a big conversation. Bryce Harper is at the forefront of it.
Yeah.
He's even last year in the offseason said, you know what, we people need to realize this game isn't 1950 anymore. This is a different time. It's a different era. We like to have fun. Let us have fun. And if we want to celebrate, if you want to cheer, if you want to fist pump, if the pitcher wants to fist pump a big strikeout, we ought to be able to fist pump a big home run. If a pitcher can glare at our dugout after striking out the side, we can glare at him as we round the bases, all that sort of thing.
This is why go ahead.
If baseball would allow its stars to be stars, to embrace the fans. I mean, what makes Odell Beckham Jr. popular in the NFL? The one-handed catch, yes. But also all of the choreography and the fun stuff he does in the end zones makes the fans watch and cheer and laugh. Same thing with Antonio Brown. Star players doing fun things to make the fans clap and laugh is what makes them recognizable, famous, and in demand.
106.5.
And that's what baseball isn't as much.
All right,
recognizable,
hang on, Mike.
Famous, and in demand. And it's in part because they won't allow the players to do the things that make the fans clap and laugh. If they flip a bat, If they take too long going around the bases, whatever it is, somebody's getting hit, all these stupid things that happen, baseball needs to regulate itself and recognize that fans in the 21st century don't want to necessarily do. And when I say it was hard for me, because I also get Goose Gossage, and I also get the other get off my lawn old school guys who want the game to remain traditionally pure and respectable and not punkish.
In this case, how about the old football phrase, act like you've been there before?
Right, exactly. And so I get them, and part of that appeals to me because I'm an older baseball fan, not old guy, but I mean a fan of older style baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But if baseball truly wants to have some names on this list, if they truly want to be recognized for positive things, honestly, They truly do need to let the players do things to connect with the fans that basketball players do, that football players do, and I don't know about to a certain extent hockey players do. You get a guy like PK Subban who of course just made his first Stanley Cup Finals in losing to the Penguins. Very, very emotional, very, very active, very, very celebratory kind of a guy when he scores, and the fans love it. Except for the traditionalists like the Goose Gossages in baseball who say, well, that's unbecoming of our game. You've got to let the players actually embrace the fans and do things that will make the fans embrace them.
And this is part of the reason why, and it's hard to believe that this is going to be 2 years ago this October, but this is why, especially in a vacuum, I love the Jose Bautista bat flip incident, for example. Because that's kind of the emotion and all that kind of stuff that we're talking about right here. But most of the time, of course, when it comes up more on, as not to, you know, begrudge him or anything, as you're not. But instead, when we have this discussion, we're always coming at it from the seemingly from that Goose Gossage angle of, oh, Jose Bautista, you shouldn't have done that, yada, 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 yada. And that's just one small little, you know, incident in this case. But it's once again demonstrating, at least to me in this context, that I think more guys need to do that. Yeah, I'm going out right now and saying more guys need to do things like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. They really do, and I think, you know, not like Yasiel Puig did.
Right.
Come across home plate, you know, celebrating and fist pumping and doing the Usain Bolt arrow thing or something like that. Might be, you know, like we see in with Subban in the NHL and like we see with you know, certain NFL players. Do some fun things like that. Don't flip off the fans. Embrace the fans, and they will embrace you.
And by the way,
of course, your sport grows exponentially.
You know, and side note, real quick, hubrisly on Yasiel Puig, given the bird and everything, if his logic was, well, they were saying stuff to me and I did it, oh my goodness, what would have happened if you older Toledo fans know what I'm talking about here? Oh my goodness, would he have charged into the stands at old Ned Skelton, for example? The way that things were, you know, verbally at there and how it, you know, right on top of the players, if he's doing that in Cleveland, he one day, if he had played at the old Ned Skelton, he would have probably rushed into the stands then.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You are exactly right about that. You know, I meant to talk a little NBA in this segment, but, you know, we got off onto the Yasiel Puig thing. So, tell you what, let's stay on baseball. We got a Sports Center. Speaking of baseball, I got Hens tickets here, by the way, sitting here burning a hole through our desk. What do you say we give these away? I've got Hens tickets for Saturday at Fifth Third Field against Durham. I've got a pair of them. I got two pairs left, actually. I'll give one today, one tomorrow. How's that sound? Let's give away one right now to caller number 8. Just on a whim, caller number 8 to 866-240-1065. Go see the Hens and Durham on Saturday at Fifth Third Field. Then, more baseball talk on the other side. We spent a lot of time in the first hour on the Tigers. They are 2 games behind the defending American League champion Indians in the American League Central right now. Why are the Indians still spinning their wheels, stuck in the mud? Matt Lodi will join us from Cleveland to talk about that as we continue on the Extravaganza.
Again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed rolling onward. It's 4:38, 22 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you. Then we turn it over to Mr. Miller for drive time right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Talked a lot of Tigers baseball in hour number one. Let's figure out about what's going on with the team directly in front of them in the standings. They are 2 behind the Indians, who are 2 behind the Twins. And nobody can really understand why it is that the defending American League champions are still spinning their wheels as if stuck in the mud. They continue to just play sloppy baseball, inconsistent baseball, and hovering around 500. Is it a World Series hangover? Could be. The Chicago Cubs, who beat them in Game 7 of the World Series, are doing the same thing at 32-32, hovering right around the top of the National League Central. Joining us now to make a little bit of sense out of this from the Cleveland perspective is Matt Lodi, who covers the Indians for ineosportsinsiders.com, as well as the Associated Press in Cleveland. Mr. Lodi, good to have you back. How are you, brother?
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, man. What do you think? Is there something to that World Series hangover where, you know, everything was so intense for the month of September and then, of course, into October with the World Championship that it just isn't really clicking for them now? And is that the same thing that's going out there in Chicago, or is that just an excuse for playing poor baseball?
You know, that's the question, and it's a question that's certainly not an easy one to answer. But, I mean, I think there is something to be said for, a kind of a younger team that, you know, maybe hasn't had that level of success, having to play that much longer than everybody else. And you have the emotion of, you know, every day is a huge game and every pitch means something. I mean, I think in the case of this team too, there's been plenty of bumps along the way. I mean, I think, you know, the Kipnis injury, I think has been, something that was not necessarily advertised as a big deal, but I think his slow start has kind of hurt this team. You know, the outfielders getting dinged up. I mean, you're missing Brandon Guyer. You miss Lonnie Chisenhall for a while. And I think the starting rotation has been really inconsistent. You know, Bauer, Tomlin, you know, obviously I don't think anybody thought that Danny Salazar would have the issues he's had. So, you know, there's been a variety of issues other than just the fact that they played a lot longer than almost anybody else other than the Cubs. And I think that the slow start, you know, we've talked about it before. When big things are expected of this team, they don't deliver. When nobody's talking about them, that's when they seem to creep up on people. And of course, everybody, myself included, felt like they would come in and just kind of own this division. I did think Detroit would have something to say about it, but I still thought the Indians were the better team. And right now, it just hasn't worked out that way for the Indians or the Tigers, for that matter.
Well, you mentioned a few different names and their slow starts and their problems being part of the issue here. So let's talk about some of them. Whatever did happen to Danny Salazar, and do you see him resurrecting and figuring it out and making his way back to the big club? Because he's supposed to be a big part of the rotation in the second
right. half. Well, I think they're doing the right thing, Bob, and that is, I mean, up until this latest thing with the injury,
yeah,
I think they were trying to do,
right?
yeah, but I think they were trying to do the right thing, which is, you know, let him try to figure some things out in the bullpen. And, you know, we've seen this over the years going way back to Cliff Lee back in 07. Then he comes out the following year as a Cy Young Award winner. You know, we saw it with Josh Tomlin and he kind of figured it out. We saw it with Bauer. And even though he's been up and down, I mean, he's in the mix, at least, I guess, if you will, and is pitching better than he was before he ended up in the bullpen. And now I think they felt the same way with Danny Salazar, that, you know, he would go to the pen, you know, figure some things out. I think a big thing with Danny, and it's one of the things that Tito Francona talked about and other players, or other coaches, Mickey Callaway at one point, I talked to him about it, is Danny just doesn't look confident. And I think that that's a big reason why he was so successful a year ago in the first half of the season, is that he just pitched like he didn't care, from a standpoint of he had that swagger, and he just doesn't appear to have that swagger anymore. Not that he's pitching scared. I mean, that I don't know if I can say that, because, you know, I'm not in his head to know that, but it just looks like he's sometimes afraid to go inside a little bit. He's sometimes afraid to throw his best stuff at times because he doesn't trust it. And you know, Bob, in sports, I mean, you've seen it, you know, in basketball when a guy's afraid to take a shot. I mean, sometimes I think it happens in baseball, you know, like either at the plate or on the mound when a guy's afraid to go to his best stuff. And I think with Danny, that's sort of what's happened. You know, this latest setback might be a good thing, only because, you know, taking a respite, you know, healing up all the way from, you know, the shoulder situation that he's dealing with, and then, you know, hopefully maybe finding himself at the minor league level. I know that they wanted him to go down to Akron to work with the pitching coach down there, a former major leaguer, because they felt like he would be able to show him some things. But, you know, you're right. He was expected and is still expected to be a big part of this thing. When it's all said and done, it's just a matter of now, can he work his way back? Because let's just be honest, Mike Clevenger, Ryan Merritt, there are some guys that are going to challenge for that fifth spot in this rotation. Danny may be on the outside looking in if he doesn't get things straightened out.
Let's talk about some other people who are supposed to be doing much, much more than what they are doing. Carlos Santana, chief among them, 214 is what he's saying right now, 8 home runs and 35 RBIs. We were all worried about what a flop Edwin Encarnacion was, because he was hitting around 200 for the first month and a half or so of the season. We'll come to find out he's steadily climbing to where he's supposed to be. He's at 243 now. We expect about another 20 points on that batting average. But the power numbers, you know, 12 home runs, only 26 RBIs, that's not going to be enough, but it's coming. Carlos Santana, instead of going in that direction that Encarnacion is going, he's going in the opposite. He started out somewhat hot and has just fallen off the table.
Well, I'll give you one number for Carlos as I'm looking through some notes on him. In his last 12 games since May 30th, he's 6-44, which is .136 with 2 homers and 5 runs batted in. I mean, he's I don't know if he's not seeing the ball. I don't know, again, if he's just in one of those, you know, where maybe he's trying to do too much at the plate, which is what we all thought about Edwin early on, which is why Terry Francona took him from the 4-hole to the 5-hole, because I think they felt that, you know, he was putting too much pressure on himself. Well, maybe that's the exact same thing now with Carlos Santana. And, you know, the other thing with Santana is he's not hitting the ball with runners in scoring position, which is a huge number. He's only batting .258, 17-66. And I know there's a lot of guys on this team that have struggled in that area. But when you're talking about your 4 and 5 hitters not hitting with runners in scoring position, that's, I think, a lot of times why you have issues getting runners home. We saw last night. I mean, they had an opportunity in the first inning against Clayton Kershaw. Jason Kipnis doubles, gets to third on, you know, with one out, and they can't get him home. I mean, that's just, you know, you can't, especially in a game like last night where every run meant something up until obviously the kind of the meltdown by the bullpen in the 8th and 9th innings. You know, this is a job of a guy like a Carlos Santana. This is a job by a guy like Edwin to get those guys home when it means something. And, you know, this is the thing about Carlos. Obviously, you would think that he'd be so motivated based on his contract situation, you know, knowing that next year he can do whatever he wants to do. And you know, I'm sure that if you ask him today, he's going to all be about staying in Cleveland. But I think we've heard that about 1,100 times over the years from different players when it comes to playing in June and July. But, you know, let's see at the end of the year whether it ends
this. You know what? I hope he doesn't say he wants to stay in Cleveland.
Well, you're right. But, you know, I mean, this was a guy who had such a huge year last year, you know, 34 home runs, you know, was hitting .308. You know, in the WBC and look like a guy that was ready to have a big season because, and a lot of people use the contract thing as motivation for him to have a big season. And like you said, he's just kind of going backwards. I don't remember the last time he's had a big hit. And as I mentioned earlier with the, you know, in his last 12 games, batting .136, just, you know, just that's not going to get it done, especially with Terry putting him in the four hole. That just, it's just not going to happen.
What about Frankie Lindor, who, by the way, was just learned today as the Major League Baseball All-Star vote totals were updated, has been passed up, probably rightfully so, by Carlos Correa, who's
at
294 and still doing tremendous things for the best team in the American League, the Houston Astros. But Frankie got off to a torrid start, much more so than even Santana, and has fallen, you know, not quite as far as Santana, but he's only hitting .254 right now. Terry Francona, if I heard correctly, said yesterday or Monday that he thinks that, you know, trying to swing for the fences and becoming that power guy, you know, he's leading American League shortstops with his 12 home runs, has kind of cost him a little bit in terms of his short, more productive swing. How long until he figures that out? Have you talked to him? Have you heard from him? What's the story?
Well, nobody, I don't think anybody directly has asked him, you know, what is going on with you at the plate, but I'll give you a number. Just like I gave you with Santana, in Francisco's last 13 games, he's hitting .143. So, again, he, just like Carlos, is in one of these crazy slumps right now, 7 for his last 49 with one home run and 3 runs batted in. You know, everybody loves the home run. I mean, fans love the home run. It's great to see it, you know. But you're right. I think there could be a detriment, a little bit of some negativity attached to the fact, like, this is not a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs. And I know that, you know, he has 12. It's tied for the team lead with Edwin. But at the same time, Bob, you and I know that this guy's a much more proficient hitter when he's hitting doubles and singles and driving in runs and stealing bases and whatnot, not when he's swinging for the fences. And you know, you're right about what Terry said. Terry said that actually yesterday in the pregame. He was asked about it. But, you know, I think with Lindor, you know, again, so much on him a year ago. He was so good in so many ways. But as of this point, this homestand has been terrible. He's one for 15 in this homestand. I mean, it's just, you know, and again, that the top of the order in general has not been getting it done in these first four games of this homestand with Chicago and now Los Angeles. And Lindor's a big part of that because he, you know, you really look at him and Kipnis as the two guys that are supposed to more or less set the table, you know, for guys like Edwin and guys like Carlos and, you know, and so on and so forth.
And Brantley's doing his job.
Right. Yeah, Brantley did his job. You know, he didn't last night in the first inning, but then he came back and got Robertson home in the third inning that made it a 2-1 game. But obviously Brantley is, you know, a guy that they're getting, I don't want to say bonus from, but, you know, he's still batting .289.
So. He's got the same number of RBIs as Edwin Encarnacion. Which
true. No, you're
is,
right.
Is
but you didn't know what to expect, yeah.
Nobody expected that based on where he was coming in. And he's hitting .288 as well. And you mentioned Kipnis as well. You know, again, we know he had some injuries and he had to start off on the DL and then came off and started to do some good things. But again, he's hitting .220. I mean, if I look up and down,
yeah.
The you know, the box score yesterday and the updated batting averages. You know, Kipnis .225. If anybody told you that the Indians, the defending AL champions, were going to have Kipnis at .225, Lindor at .254, Encarnacion at .243 and only 26 RBIs at this point, Santana at .214, and you were to ask those people, is this team going back to the playoffs? The answer is absolutely not. Not with
no,
that kind of
not
production.
No, not at this point.
Unless
no.
You're getting zeros thrown up by every member of the starting rotation on a nightly basis.
Right, and you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at tonight's, you know, basically tonight's box score here, the game notes, and all that other stuff. And there isn't one player in this lineup for the Indians hitting over .300. I mean, that's just amazing to me. Yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, that's kind of the barometer of really good hitting, and not one player is doing it. You know, and not only that, but you've got, let me count real quick, 1, 2, 3, 4 players batting under .250 in your lineup. So, you know, that's saying something. And, you know, this team is very blessed by the fact that they're in a division that, as I mentioned earlier, other than the Tigers, I thought would challenge them. But, you know, Kansas City and Chicago are going nowhere. They're going to be sellers at the trade deadline. Hey, give credit to the Minnesota Twins. Paul Molitor's done a sensational job. They're hanging around, but I think that you and I both know as of today, I don't think that we'll be talking about them in September. I find that hard to believe anyway. I mean, I'm still putting my odds that the Indians eventually come out of this funk. And it just seems like every homestand, whether it's coming off a bad road trip or coming off a bad game or whatever it is, there's always a day that we end up talking with Terry Francona about what, when is this thing going to turn around? And that just gets a little mind numbing. And it really, you know, on Friday in the game against Chicago was really telling when he gave that long dissertation about that he's had more meetings in the last 2 weeks than he's ever had in his life. You know, he's as frustrated as everybody else. You know, he's, you know, the players want to do it. He wants to do it. Well, it, you know, again, like anything else in life, you can talk about it till you're blue in the face, but until you do it, nothing's going to change. And that's where I think these players, have to get it in their heads that it's, you know, you can't look at September right now. You can't look at the World Series or the ALCS or anything. You got to look at tonight's game against the Dodgers, and then you got to look at tomorrow's noon game against the Dodgers. That's really all you can do. You can't, I think that some of this is the, what can I say, the almost the automatic pass that a lot of, you know, the national experts and even the local guys all said, hey, this team's going back to the World Series. And I think that there was sort of like that, you know, that confidence and maybe unrightfully so, because this team doesn't have a history of coming off good seasons with another good season, of just sort of saying, oh, yeah, they'll be able to get it done. It's not going to be a problem, especially with the division they're in, especially with the starting pitching. Other than Kluber and even Carrasco to a certain extent, nobody in the starting rotation has blown me away. And both Kluber and Carrasco have had their injury issues already. And, you know, I mean, really the third guy in the rotation that's, if there's anybody else that's impressed me, it's a guy we're going to see Saturday in Minnesota and Mike Clevenger. I mean, other than those three guys, nobody is like blowing me away with how they're pitching right now. And certainly we saw last year when this team did get to the World Series, it was mostly due to how well the starting pitching was able to handle itself in the postseason.
And no question about it. And by the way, I didn't even mention Yan Gomes, the starting catcher, who in 42
right.
starts is hitting .236 with very little power production as well.
Well, but
who covers the Cleveland Indians for NEOSportsInsiders.com and also the AP out in Cleveland. Jim Kirschlin, our producer, is with us as well. He's got a question for you, Matty. Go ahead.
And you know, we're looking at the, you know, this division and everything, and I'm with you, Matt. I mean, Bob and I have been still saying this, and I imagine we're going to continue to say this. We're still not fully, you know, buying into the Twins to carry on, you know, into August, into
not
September.
Fully, not even a little bit, to be honest with
right.
you. I mean, I'm just waiting for that other shoe to drop.
Exactly, as am I. But since we are here, and you are correct, there's still two games against a very good Dodgers team to still take care of, but suddenly we have a kind of important four-game series against the Twins coming up this weekend that, you know,
right.
the Indians take 3 out of 4 or something, then they're in first place, and we all may be thinking a little differently on Monday. Would you classify this as a bigger series early enough in the year to maybe, you know, considering the matchup?
Well, I think it's a big series for two reasons, Jim. Number one is you're going up against the team that you're chasing right now in the division, of course, in Minnesota. And also number two, you know, that doubleheader kind of throws things into a little bit of a loop there, because you never know how teams will play in doubleheaders. And the Indians are going to throw out, you know, one of which we talked about a moment ago, and I think is throwing the ball very well. But the other one, in Ryan Merritt, is a guy we haven't seen here since game 5 of the ALCS a year ago. So, you know, I don't want to put too much pressure. I mean, if the Indians go to Minnesota and win all 4 games or win 3 out of 4 and find themselves a game up in the division, like, oh, yeah, this is the team we all thought we were going to see. But on the other hand, I think from a confidence standpoint where this team is right now, the Indians, I think they could use a series like that in Minnesota where they go out there, they hit the baseball, they move the base runners around. And more so than anything, as I mentioned a moment ago, they pitch well because, again, this is a team that, you know, just has not consistently pitched day in and day out like a lot of people felt like they would. So I guess to answer your question, big series, yeah, I could say that. But I don't think that, you know, no matter what happens in the next 4 days after tomorrow will dictate the long-term effect of the AL Central. I think for the short term, as I said, though, it would be good for the Indians to get on track and against a team that obviously they are looking up at right now, 2 games out of the division.
Matt Lodi joining us, talking Indians baseball and American League Central baseball. Last thing before you go, best team in the American League, Houston Astros or New York Yankees?
Wow, great question.
Right
I'm only going to go – I'm still going to go with Houston. I still love their pitching better. Dallas Keuchel, Lance McCullers, Brian McCann is the best hitting catcher behind the plate. Carrera at shortstop. You know, Altuve, obviously. They're going to be tough to beat when it comes down to it. And I know some Indians fans are taking solace in the fact that they beat them 5 out of 6, but – you know, all bets are off when it comes to the postseason. I wouldn't want to play that team. But the Yankees are, have been tremendous, and I think the Aaron Judge phenomenon that we're all running into right now has really given them a big eye for the future. I think that they're looking like a team that's also going to have to be contended with. And like we said earlier, we're not even talking about two other teams in the American League that we thought we would, one being Texas and the other being Boston. Those teams are having inconsistencies just like the Indians are right now.
No question about it. Matt Lodi, really great analysis, my friend. I appreciate it. Matt Lodi, check him out online at neosportsinsiders.com. You also can check him out on the AP in Cleveland as well. Matt, thanks for the Indians update. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. Anytime.
You got it. All right, there you go. Music is a-playing. That means time is a-wasting. We got to get ourselves up out of here. Mike Miller and your Drive Time show is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Join us again tomorrow as we'll react to some of the stuff we happens. We'll see if K-Rod gets in into a better position now after he had his conversation with Brad Ausmus. We'll follow up on the Indians and the Dodgers again and preview, of course, that big series coming up over the weekend with the Twins. All of that will be tomorrow right here on the Extravaganza. Have a good one.